Good afternoon and happy new year, everyone. It's Dr. Nigro again with our next episode of Psychology Unplugged. Thank you for continuing to follow our program, reach out to us. It's very inspiring and a fun part of my week. And there's so many topics that we have covered and so many yet to cover, and I will give you my contact information at the end of this episode. I know a lot of people have reached out. This time of the year in the United States, it's tough. The holidays are over. It's still dark early in the evening, and I think we find ourselves, I think I've always said one of the worst places for any of us to be is in our own mind. So last week's episode, I focused a lot on overlapping symptoms with borderline personality disorder and bipolar disorder. And I've alluded to this in many different episodes. And I think I did an episode a few years ago on this topic I want to talk about today, which is post-traumatic stress disorder or PTSD. And I'm gonna focus primarily on PTSD for individuals 6 and above, because PTSD for children younger than 6 has different diagnostic criteria. And the reason, you know, Julie and I, you know, we talked during the week about what topics we want to bring up and what we think, and someone had emailed me from Australia, and that's I try to talk to people from that side of the world or Africa, and it's according to the time we've been able to do it with some people, but it's a little tougher, but managed to work. But you know, it says something interesting in the email, thanking us for the podcast, about, you know, their perceptions of growing up between her and another family member. And I think when it comes to trauma, one, it is a very real thing, and PTSD is a very real disorder. And I think sometimes, you know, we think somebody has to have, you know, been in you know, combat or in a wartime situation, when in reality, I think trauma, first of all, is different than PTSD. And trauma is also a subjective thing. And by that, I mean two people can experience the same event or witness the same event or have the same event happen to them and have very different reactions to it. And I think I talked about this in one of the first podcast I did, which is about perception in the past. And I think we do live in a world of perception. We all see things differently through our own lenses. And when you factor metaphorical lenses, I mean, and then when you factor the whole construct and concept of personality into it, which is really is, as I've said, it's our belief about ourselves, our belief about other people, our belief about the world in general. That's the framework by which we navigate our lives. But as a diagnostician and neuropsychologist, I rely heavily on the DSM, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, because it is a crucial instrument in diagnostics, because symptoms are not disorders. And I've seen enough in doing this of people being diagnosed with different conditions and not really meeting the full criteria. And that's why we have very specific and empirical evidence to support for the various disorders in the DSM. So, you know, I would encourage you, if you are a clinician, I think I said this last episode or the one prior, definitely you want the desk version. That's gonna, it has so much more information in there. Another great book is Synopsis of Psychiatry by Kaplan and Sadok. That's a great, great book that really encompasses the totality of the field, both, you know, diagnostics, the history of psychology and psychiatry, psychopharmacology, all the different theoretical models and all the different disorders in and of themselves. So I think, you know, there, in my experience, I have found that, you know, I think trauma is often confused with actual PTSD. So I want to go through my notes and give you more, you know, very specific criteria for what constitutes actual post-traumatic stress disorder. So just by the name in and of itself, it's post-traumatic, which means these are the residual artifacts, and this is the aftermath of having experienced or having been exposed to something of a traumatic nature. So, you know, it's really, it's exposure to like an actual or threatened death, serious injury, sexual violence, that manifests in several different ways. One of which is directly experiencing the event, having something done directly to you as an individual. Witnessing in person the events as it occurred to others. So actually witnessing the events in person is a very important one, not vicariously through social media, but actually being in person and witnessing something traumatic happening to another individual. Learning that a traumatic event occurred to a close family or friend, in case of like actual or threatened death of a family member, the events have to be violent or accidental. You know, getting that phone call in the, you know, that none of us want to get in the middle of the night, that someone, you know, loved one was killed on the highway. You know, I have very vivid memories. I'm not saying I have PTSD, but I have very, very vivid memories when I picked up the phone to learn that my mother had passed away suddenly. And, you know, it's forever etched in my mind. And I remember the text that my brother sent me on March 30th of 2020 at 6:14 in the morning that my father had passed away. So some things we remain embedded in our psyche. Another important distinguishing feature is experiencing repeated or extreme exposure to aversive details of the traumatic event. And you see this a lot with like first responders, police officers who work with child abuse, or first responders having to collect human remains, or responding to that wreck on the highway and seeing things. And you know, people, I think you could build up a level of healthy desensitization, which is necessary in order to do the work that we do, because, you know, people tell us things that they otherwise, most people in their lives, do not know. And it, depending on the area of specialization or what you work on, especially if you're doing trauma work, you're going to be exposed to a lot of difficult things and have hard conversations and hear things. And sometimes you walk away like, how did you survive that? And so, I mean, it's a privilege, when you're able to have that kind of relationship with a patient and they are comfortable in telling you, in pretty graphic detail, the events that they, have been exposed to. So, in addition to the things I just talked about, there has to be one or more of the following intrusive symptoms associated with the traumatic event that begin after the event occurred, hence post-traumatic stress disorder. So one is a recurrent, involuntary, and intrusive, distressing memories of the traumatic event. There's just some things that we can't unsee. There's some things that we can't unhear. And people who have PTSD have described their experiences in such explicit detail. And to walk around with that every day is, I think, incredibly difficult. Recurrent distressing dreams of the content that are related to it. So, the topic I did a few weeks ago on nightmare disorder. Nightmares are very common in individuals with PTSD, especially. If during the day they're reminded of something, I hate the term trigger, but again, we can't always control, we can only control our environment so much. But it dreams and sleep dysregulation are very common in PTSD. Dissociative reactions, flashbacks, where the individual really believes and feels as if the traumatic events were recurring, and their body almost goes back, and their mind almost goes back to that regressive state of whatever stage of life something may have happened. If you just take sexual abuse, somebody, say a boyfriend may grab his girlfriend's, put his arm around her back, and she suddenly freaks out. Because she may have, say she has a history of sexual abuse, she may freak out, and the guy's like, oh, what did I do? And I have no idea, because the body, again, our sympathetic nervous system is constantly activated because we are designed to survive. And physical survival is very similar, and I think psychological survival is similar to physical survival. So, these reactions can occur, to a minor reaction to just an extreme meltdown. Someone who may be a Vietnam or war veteran, and helicopters flying close to the ground, and say they had a traumatic experience in a wartime exposure. It could easily that they've reported like they drop to the ground and begin sweating, or they're curled up in a corner at night because they heard something or saw something on TV that reminded them and brought them back to that state. So another is like intense or prolonged psychological distress and exposure to external cues that resemble an aspect of the environment. So the example I would kind of use is, say a woman, unfortunately, she was raped in a house by as a child, and on her way to work, she has a panic attack every time she drives past this house. And without maybe even realizing it, through going, through psychotherapeutic process, you realize that was the house where she was molested, and then her body is going back into this that childhood state and having a panic attack. And this recommendation would be is, take a different way to work. And that's, again, sometimes we can't always control what the world throws at us, which makes doing, navigating with post-traumatic stress disorder somewhat difficult, because avoidance is it's a defense mechanism, but it can get to a point where it can become pathological, to a point where some people develop agoraphobia and refuse to leave their homes, and their worlds become very, very microscopic. And again, a lot of it's out of a sense of fear and self-preservation. Another thing is persistent avoidance of any kind of stimulus associated with a traumatic event. So avoidance of memories, thoughts, feelings. So I don't, it's, I wouldn't say this is denial, I would say it's more avoidance to just, I don't want to talk about it. And again, not doing much therapy anymore, but in individuals that I work with, and I work with individuals with primarily with borderline personality, I notice trauma is something that the person has to be ready and willing to work on. And I think, I've seen a lot of times people are in therapy and, they get a detailed history and then they're automatically, oh, this, you were molested as a child, or you were raped, and the therapist goes right towards that, and that is not what you do. You have to meet the patient where they are at, unless it is so blatantly obvious and clear that the persistent avoidance of dealing with the trauma is needs to be dealt with because it's impacting all other areas of their life. But trauma work is a very specialized field. I treat trauma primarily from a cognitive behavioral trauma focused therapy. I have colleagues, and I've mentioned this before, that I want to have on who do EMDR, which is eye movement desensitization reprocessing. It's a very specialized technique for trauma. So it can get to a place of avoiding certain or efforts to avoid any kind of external or external reminders, people, places, conversations, activities, objects, situations, anything that arouses disturbing memories or feelings associated with the event. And again, it makes perfect sense. Like, why would a person want to think about this who's experienced trauma? And again, this is it makes sense. Why would I want to think about, I don't want to think about losing my father. I don't want to think about, we want, I just human nature, I don't think we want to think about negative things. But when something traumatic has happened to an individual and they meet the diagnostic criteria for PTSD, it makes sense why you would want to avoid talking about it. But again, if the avoidance becomes problematic, where it is negatively impacting all aspects of your life, and causing, social, emotional, and occupational or educational impairment, that is where it becomes problematic. And that is part of every diagnostic, part of every criteria that's part of every diagnosis in the DSM, is that, again, symptoms are not disorders. And to, the disorder is, people can have like traits or quirks, and sometimes people think, oh, I have OCD. A lot of times it's like you have quirks, or you have traits, but you don't really meet the diagnostic criteria because it's not impacting the social, emotional, occupational, excuse me, academic functioning. Another aspect of PTSD is negative alterations in cognition and mood associated with a traumatic event, beginning and definitely worsening after the event, which can be an inability to remember an important aspect of the event, which we call like dissociative amnesia. And it's not, sometimes people just block things out. And this is not related to head injury, not related to drugs, but dissociative amnesia is a very realistic condition where a person, and this is where EMDR becomes a very effective therapeutic intervention, because it's unlocking these memories, because they are there. The memories have been encoded, but the mind is also operating in a self-preservation mode. But the past cannot be undone, but the past can be, I think, dealt with. And the goal is to come to some resolution and to navigate through whatever trauma someone has experienced in an adaptive and healthy way through really good psychotherapy. Also, exaggerated, you see, this is a very common exaggerated negative beliefs about oneself or others, like I am bad, I'm ugly, no one can be trusted, the world is dangerous, my whole system is just dysfunctional. And you know what? That mindset sounds a lot like borderline. I talk about the borderline, personality construct. Like, I am unstable. Other people dictate my destiny. And the world is an unpredictable place that I do whatever, whenever, however, whatever capacity in order to survive psychologically. And this is where the symptom overlap comes in. And sometimes in the episodes of depression, as part of whether it was unipolar depression or bipolar depression, where you start to see the symptom overlap. And can you have bipolar and borderline and PTSD? Absolutely. And why, again, I will say this ad nauseum for every podcast, it's so crucial to get a full neuropsych eval. And there's no magic. It's not like I can do a pie chart and say, here's your three diagnoses. It doesn't work like you slice the pie chart and say, okay, 40% of your problems are related to PTSD, 10% are related to bipolar, and 50 are related to borderline. It doesn't work that way. Not from a diagnostic perspective, but from a therapeutic perspective, as you engage that process, a good therapist will be able to kind of delineate and differentiate kind of what's impacting what. And this is where all the symptoms kind of go in and out of each other. And it is, really crucial, to get a very, very detailed history from an individual. So because I do diagnostics primarily, when I'm doing a neuropsych eval, and I tell people I'm gathering information, so I do ask about any history of, trauma, physical abuse, sexual abuse, emotional abuse, verbal abuse, financial abuse, anything that they would consider to be traumatic. And I don't go into much detail, and I preface this before even getting into asking all the questions. I say it's not because I don't care, it's because I don't know where you are in, if you're in therapy, where you're at in therapy, and I do not want to open Pandora's box. I'm simply gathering information and looking for, specific symptoms, given, whatever the referral question I have for a specific individual. There's a lot of self-blame. There's a lot of self-blame with trauma, like, whether even young adults who blame, and I work with, females who blame themselves for having been raped by their father. I it it it's it's it, it's a distort, especially if you're the subject of abuse by a narcissist. They're great at convincing you and gaslighting you into believing it was your fault. And this is a part of PTSD is self-blame. Like, why did I go out with him? Why did I go out with her? Why didn't I see this? Why didn't I listen to my friends? And there's no shame in having experienced something traumatic. And there is resolution, and we have empirically proven techniques in order to, overcome trauma. Living in a persistent negative emotional state is very common. Fear, horror, anger, guilt, shame. Again, a lot of this you can see in borderline, and you could even see in different periods of bipolarity. So this again, these symptom crossovers are so crucial to understand is what is the diagnostic picture that you're dealing with? A markedly diminished interest in activities somebody wants to enjoy. So somebody who has a history, long history of sexual abuse, that's going to impact their relationships, either one or two ways. Either they completely avoid intimacy altogether, or they've allowed their self-esteem to just be identified as something objectified and are overly sexual. Now, that could be part of trauma, and that's also part of borderline personality. And that could also be something that could occur during a manic or hypomanic state of bipolarity, of hypersexuality. So, hope you kind of see the importance of the diagnostic process and where these symptoms overlap independent of the traumatic experience in them itself. And I know I'm using sexual abuse because it's a very common one, but there's so many other forms of trauma. But I'm talking more about the aftermath of what is causing what. Like I say, you don't develop borderline when you're 25 years old. But could a traumatic event cause bipolar? yes, from the perspective of what's called the diathesis stress model, which I've mentioned before, which is the interaction of genetics and environmental stressors. So under enough stress, we all walk around with genes, not denim, but genetic compositions. And some of us carry genetic markers, especially in bipolar has one of the highest heritability indices of the vast psychiatric conditions. Or all the psychiatric conditions. So, you know, under certain time, circumstances of stress, it could certainly be a contributory factor in possibly turning something on that may otherwise never have been activated. Other things people talk about is feeling detached, estranged from other people. And again, I think that disconnect and just lack of, I think it goes back to that avoidance. And, you know, in a persistent inability to experience positive symptoms, happiness, satisfaction, love. And again, this is are these symptoms of PTSD or are these symptoms of borderline? Are these symptoms of bipolarity during a depressive episode or because of dysregulated sense of self in borderline pathology, or is this an artifact of trauma? So, you know, this is where, you know, these things are not spelled out in the DSM, but we have assessments. We have access to the tests to actually find out what the real answer is. There's also alterations in arousal and reactivity associated with a traumatic event. Like irritable behavior, angry outbursts, even with like little or no provocation, you know, and a lot of it, I think, you know, because again, fight or flight, the body, if the person perceives danger, danger, Will Robinson, they're going to react, reckless or self-destructive behavior. So, okay. Reckless or destructive behavior. This is a part of PTSD and sometimes it comes from, you know, the world has just done so much harm to me and I don't care. But could that reckless or impulsive behavior, could also be happening during a manic or hypomanic episode of bipolar? That could also be that could be part of the symptomatic manifestation of borderline personality. Again, all of this cross, I mean, imagine like multiple highways intersecting all over each other, but there is one final destination, and that's the diagnostic, you know, the final analysis of the diagnostic process. Exaggerated startle response, problems with concentration. This is a very common one that I see. People who have a history of trauma, but say they meet that criteria for PTSD. If you're constantly avoiding, the mind cannot hold two thoughts with equal intensity simultaneously. It just can't. It's what we call, like, one of the things we measure is cognitive flexibility in neuropsych. So if you're having, you know, exaggerated startle response, that's not uncommon, especially in people with histories of physical abuse or sexual abuse, even verbal abuse. You know, somebody, you know, boss may raise their voice to an employee and they kind of freak out because it brings them back to, like, you know, the petulant child who's 4 years old and dad is screaming at the top of his lungs what a piece of garbage the child is. And I think if you hear things enough, the self-fulfilling prophecy is a very credible theoretical concept, because if you hear the same thing long enough by enough people, you start to believe it, whether it's true or not. But the problems in concentration, okay, again, is this ADHD? Is this an artifact of PTSD? Is this bipolarity, because there is a strong correlation between bipolar and ADHD? Is this also borderline? If you're in that state of constant psychological survival, you're not paying attention. That's why the testing is able to figure out exactly what it is. Sleep disturbances, I mentioned that. And in PTSD, you can also have dissociative symptoms. I did an episode on this, so I'm not going to go into great detail, but dissociation is something that is related specifically to trauma. And people use the term all the time, I dissociate. And dissociative identity disorder, I would encourage you to go back and listen to that episode I did on that, because it's linked very much to trauma, as well as derealization and depersonalization, which are not psychotic, but it's a feeling of detachment. It's a feeling of unreality, often linked to elevated levels of anxiety, which is also part of PTSD in and of itself. But you know, you have to make sure this is not an artifact of medication, of drugs, of head injury. So, you know, it bring to kind of tying it all together, you know, if you know, trauma one again is subjective, and this is a legitimate disorder, and a lot of people come in saying I have PTSD, and they vary. Yes, sometimes they actually do. Other times they don't, and that's why it's so important to get a full eval to really understand, so then you know how to treat it. Because when you talk about these symptoms like recklessness or self-destructive behavior, low mood, diminished interest, exaggerated startle response, problems in concentration, sleep disturbances, irritability, especially the reckless and destructive behavior, because that could be bipolar, that could be borderline, that could be histrionic, that could be multiple other things. And I think sometimes PTSD, I have not worked, I like the outliers, but I can't think of a single case in recent memory where it's ever just PTSD. It's usually something else. Depression, anxiety, you know, the trifecta of PTSD, borderline, bipolar. Yes, they can all happen. But this is why getting a strong and detailed history is very important. And also working with, I have wonderful colleagues that I work with, both, you know, whether it's Julie, who does medication, because there's no medication that's going to erase your memory. And this is not a one session thing, but I have colleagues who do an amazing job, at treating trauma. And trauma is something that you really want to work with somebody who is trained in trauma, independent of the modality. You know that I'm biased towards cognitive behavioral therapy, but you know, EMDR, especially when those memories are repressed and locked away, and when you get into complex trauma, and this is a new term that gets thrown around, complex trauma is when you've had multiple traumas of different types, and sometimes that can be difficult to treat. But I've also seen from the work of colleagues that I have, from seeing somebody from the start where they come to me first and then going through getting on the right medication and going through therapy and regaining their lives back. And I've seen it in the patients I've worked with. It's transformative. But the other part is some memories will always remain, and things will happen in life that we just cannot predict. And think something could be very overt, something could be very innocuous. Like I said, the boyfriend putting his arm around his girlfriend that he just met, not realizing that that's what her abuser used to do. And you know, people can work through that, but it's a real disorder, and it has multiple components. So, Julie's.
I want
to talk about something. All right, so let her pop on.
And hi, everyone. Happy New Year. I really think that this episode is hopefully going to be very helpful for people, especially with the educational piece. Overlapping symptoms seems to be more common than not, and it can be very misleading and confusing for a person who is experiencing all of these symptoms. On a side note, I think if you follow us on Instagram, we're not the best at Instagram, gotta say, but you probably have seen our affinity for saving wild horses and horses who are being abandoned and abused and neglected and sold at auction for slaughter. I'm saying this from my platform to help a woman that we know, that we've come to know, especially in the past week. We've helped to donate through Amazon a wish list for All Seated in a Barn. Talia Fisher has an Instagram page, and she has continuous stories. Right now, she is working with Patreon. That is, and there's Venmo, there's PayPal, all these other ways to donate. But she is right in the throngs of rescuing and helping animals get to the vet. This would be horses and also donkeys. But it is a very important, I don't know why, it just is. My heart just can't rest. We have donated to Patreon, but what they're trying to do, and I don't know the woman who's running Patreon per se, but Patreon is a way in which you can donate. Freedom Reigns is also another, a rescue, all, you know, nonprofit organizations. So what they're trying to do is they're trying to get people to donate $1 a month. And we have such a following, and I know that, you know, maybe none of you are on Instagram, but if you're on Facebook, you can see All Seated in a Barn. It's Talia Fisher, right? Talia?
I think so.
Yeah. And she actually responded to us when we reached out to check to see where are we shipping all these things that she needs for the horses. All these things that you can just buy on Amazon. So, we saw the wish list, and we actually communicated with her. So she's, I feel very strongly that this is a very transparent rescue mission, and you don't have to donate a lot. I'm just saying that, you know, we have, I don't know how many millions of followers, you know, maybe I can count on one hand or less, but if you hear this, please look it up. Please see All Seated in a Barn and hear what she has to say. Hit her stories, see her posts. They're very educational. The other one is Dawn Olivieri. She is actually an actress on Yellowstone that Kevin Costner, she works with Talia and she is very involved in rescuing horses as well. Horse education is something I've already mentioned. Wild Beauty Spirit, which is the movie that Ashley Avis, documentary that Ashley Avis is nominated for an Oscar for Best Documentary. Watch the documentary if you can. It will educate you as to what is really going on out there. There are wild horses that are being rounded up. It's one of the biggest roundups that's ever happened. It's happening in the United States, in the West. They're using our tax dollars for this, the BLM, and this is against the law, what they're doing. So please educate yourself with regard to that. This is all I have to get the word out. Again, it is very, very close to my heart. And I just, I'm just trying to see where is it? It is, what's it called? SRWHMG. SRWHMG. They're saving the wild alpine horses. That's one. And there's also horse education. I'll post this stuff when I see it. But All Seated in a Barn. Right in the throngs, they have 17 hours left to help find homes and get in care for these rescue animals. I encourage you to check it out. Thank you. God bless you, and Happy New Year.
Well, thank you. I've watched some of the videos, and this is, again, completely outside of the scope of this topic, but it's pretty atrocious what they do to these animals. And it's, if you get a chance, check it out. I know it's something that's very dear to Julie's heart, and I'm trying to do my best to see if I can get a hold of Bruce Springsteen, who's an avid horse rider, to be a part of this in some capacity, and if I could use this platform to do that, you know, hope for the best. But if you have a history of trauma, please realize that there is no shame, even though it can be very shameful and can be very embarrassing to talk to somebody and tell them things that have been done to you or then that you have experienced. There's many faces of trauma, but it does have very specific criteria that I hopefully did a good job of articulating and also communicating that the crossover between so many different other pathologies is a crucial part of the diagnostic process. And like I said, there is no pie chart to be able to say what percentage belongs to this or this or this. But if you look at the I guess I like using metaphors. If you look at the neurosync valves, the pie will come out. And you know it's, whether it's going to be apple or cherry or rhubarb or a combination. And then you're going to work with your therapist on kind of cutting the pie, seeing what's under there. And if you think of the pie as all that trauma, eventually the tin is going to be empty and you will hopefully be free from the demons that haunt you.
And lastly, I did find it on Instagram, and it's also on, you can get it online, wildhorseeducation.org. And it is Laura Leigh, L-E-I-G-H. And if you follow wildhorseeducation.org, it will educate you about what is actually happening. And it's a very legitimate site. She doesn't have posts on her Instagram page, but it leads you to the actual .org. So please check that out as well. Educate yourself. And these horses belong to us, so they need our help. Thank you so much. I'm going to stop talking about that now.
Okay.
All
right. Well, until next week, feel free to reach out to me through Psychology Unplugged at Outlook.com. Get a hold of me through Psychology Today. You can follow us on Instagram at psychology_unplugged_. Happy New Year. God bless. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. And I will talk to you guys next week. Bye, guys.